listening to Regional Originals, a Masters of the Stage podcast. Regional Originals is a series of interviews with some of the most exciting directors and choreographers working in America's regional theater today.
Hi, I'm M. Graham Smith, and this is Masters of the Stage Regional Originals brought to you by the SDC Foundation. Welcome to Season 2. In Season 1, we spoke with 12 directors working in America's regions during a time of incredible leadership transition. That transition continues, and we'll continue to chat about it with our guests from time to time. But the focus of Season 2 will be 12 directors who work on new plays, and we'll be finding out about their process for developing new work, as well as how they've made a career out of directing new work. Our first guest of the season is Che Yu. Fittingly, for a season about new plays, Che is both a playwright and a stage director. He began his career in Singapore, where some of his earliest work was banned for its depiction of homosexuality. In America, Yu is one of the most prolific and widely geographically ranging directors, directing at nearly every regional theater in America. His credits alone could fill the entire episode, so I'll be brief. In LA, in the late 90s, he became the founding director of the Mark Taper Asian Theater Workshop, which he led for 10 years. In 2011, he became the artistic director at Victory Gardens Theater in Chicago, where he continues to lead and direct. For his direction, he's been awarded an Obie Award and a Drama League Award. Mr. Yu edited Version 3.0, an anthology of contemporary Asian American plays for TCG Publications. He's also an alumnus of New Dramatists and serves on the executive board of the League of Chicago Theaters and Chicago's Department of Cultural Affairs and Special Events Cultural Advisory Council. Welcome, Che. It is so good to have you on the program.
Great. Thanks for having me.
The first question I'd like to ask you is, where did you grow up and how did you find the theater, or how did the theater find you?
I grew up in Singapore, in Asia, and I think that my first experience of the theater was when my grandmother used to bring me to the wayang, which is basically Chinese street opera. And what we used to have in Singapore every weekend at some community, there would be the Pasar Malam, which is basically the night market. And there'll be lots of vendors selling, you know, plastic goods, clothing, food. And in the center of the space is, I would say, a Chinese street opera theater where they erect quite quickly. And my thing was sitting with my grandmother watching the show, completely thrilled, and running backstage, watching the actors, you know, smoke a cigarette, tell a few jokes. And then they'll say, wait a second, and they'll just run on stage to do a couple of somersaults. And that thrilled me to no end. So that was my first introduction to the theater.
And how did you find your way from that night market to doing the work that you did in Singapore and then transitioning to your work as a director in America?
I'll keep it really short, but I think it leapt from my coming to the States to college. And unbeknownst to my dad, I took theater classes. And when he found out, he was kind of like freaked out, as most Asian parents would. And he says, if you want to do this theater thing, you know, take some business classes. So I did that. And when I came back to Singapore before the mandatory civil service, which is basically the army, I dabbled in some theater, did some acting, and realized at some point it wasn't for me. And when a theater company was doing a play, I asked what that play was going to be. And they said, it's not written yet. So I said, great, how much are you paying? They said, $500. So I said, I'll write you one. And that turned out to be the As If He Hears, a play that I wrote that was summarily banned in the country. Then I left for college in the States and wound up rewriting that play for Singapore because my friend Ong King Sen, artistic director of Theater Works, said, you have to rewrite this play because this play is important. So I found a way to subvert the writing. It was my first playwriting lesson. It was basically how to not write literally, by writing in between the lines. So as a result of that, the play was approved, even though I changed nothing in the play. I think from then onwards, I kept writing a little bit, and my friend from Singapore too, who had a theater company in London in called Mulan Theater Company, said, hey, want to come over and spend a few months and write me a play? And I said, sure, why not? So I went to London for 6 months and party until the last couple of months. And I said, I have nothing to write. I don't know what to say. And he says, you have this graduate play thing that you were working on, this screenplay. Why don't you make it into a play? And I said, it's a film script. You know, how much? What's your budget? And he says, well, not a lot of money. So I was being sarcastic. And I said, you know, not enough for five chairs, your budget. And he says, I can afford five chairs. So that's when I translated and adapted my play, set in London, called Porcelain, for five chairs. And then the play actually went to the Royal Court eventually. And that became a playwriting thing for me. My career took off. And from then onwards to the taper, like you had mentioned, then into directing.
And so what was your first play that you directed, and how did you transition from writing plays to directing them?
I think the first play I kind of did was less of a play, but it was more of a performance piece at Northwest Asian American Theater, where I was working with international artists to create this one work. And using some of that process, if I won't call it a play, Bill Rausch, who's now runs Oregon Shakespeare Festival, used to be the artistic director of Cornerstone Theater. When he saw my plays, he says, hey, you know, why do you want to do a play with us at Cornerstone? And it will be a community-based piece, and that's what we tend to do. And I said, great, I'll be a part of this, and tell me which community you want me to be a part of. Even though I knew deep in my heart is going to be Chinatown, and true enough, it was Chinatown. And it was great, because it was something that I was kind of intrigued by. And Bill had wanted usually all of us to look at some Western classic to transpose into the community. And I said, why don't I try devising something that I've learned from Seattle, which hence the earlier story. And he says, great. Thank God for Bill, who said I could do this. So Bill was to direct. At some point I said, Bill, maybe we should co-direct this. And Bill agreed. And then finally I said, Bill, maybe I should direct this alone, because I'm working on this from every aspect of it, and I think it'd be kind of fun to just kind of like develop and also to devise this piece. He agreed, so that became my first project, A Beautiful Country, 160 Years of Asian American Immigration, in a high school in Chinatown.
And now you direct new plays all the time, all over the country. This season is about new plays, so working on classics, you know, the author's dead, or at least not in the building during the rehearsal process. But with new plays, the relationship with the playwright seems paramount. How do you understand the relationship with the playwright and kind of negotiate that shared collaborative vision? Unless, of course, you are the playwright of the play that you're directing. How do you negotiate that when you're working with another playwright?
Well, it's complicated, because I don't know whether it could be duplicated, because as you can tell from the earlier conversation we had, I mean, my life hadn't been a playwright.
Right.
So I've actually understood the process of playwriting, and I understand how playwrights think. So as a result of this, a very immense shortcut I have.
Yeah.
And I love playwrights, because at some point, why do I need to write the play? Because playwright X has written this beautiful play. So instead of exploring that world on my own, I'm actually diving in, creating something very different.
Yes.
So my process with that playwright is basically to actually excavate even more. What is a play? What do you want to say? How can we deepen this? And the things that I say to a playwright, I would never advise a new play director to say, because it's a kind of a liberty.
Sure.
It's like a badge of honor. We've all gone through the trenches as a writer, so there's a way that we have a shortcut. So my shortcuts with players are very different.
Can you give an example of that we shouldn't say to playwrights that you feel permission to say?
You should never be prescriptive.
Yes.
Right? But I feel like I have gotten away with it, because I would say, look, this is what you're doing, which is very fascinating. What about this? What about that? What about this? Mm-hmm. And usually playwrights, you know, can throw up a wall, which I understand, because I probably would myself.
Right.
But I think because we understand that it's got nothing to do with, I would say, coming from the outside saying, do something, I understand the process. So I just say, these are a few ideas, and choose what you feel. You can use whatever thoughts that I have and make it your own. Or come back next day with something more interesting than mine. So I think it's about having a heart-to-heart conversation about writing. And I don't know. I mean, I know that other directors struggle with it, and playwrights do put up barriers. But I have fortunately kind of like gotten around it.
Right.
So I can say to some of my friends, you may want to cut this and think about this. And then it's actually a piece of advice that they may take seriously. And sometimes, God bless all of them, they come back to me and says, no, I'm going to do this, but you have to actually say something really interesting. So this is the response.
Yeah. And so what is your pipeline like in terms of the development process? Like, how early are you involved with conversations with the playwright? Do playwrights call you and say, I have a draft, I have a concept?
Actually, all levels, you know. I mean, there's some, I mean, not as an artistic director, I could even say things like, I'm looking for a play that I want to represent and reflect this community. For example, the recent example is Boo Killebrew. I found Boo through a new play festival, and we've gotten along famously. And I love the fact that she writes authentically and beautifully and poetically about working classes. And she basically had always wanted to write a play about working class women. And I realized that there was a community that I have not represented on my stage in Chicago. So when I reached out to her, you know, and just say, we're going to start this process. And what do you want to talk about? And she realized she wanted to talk about women who have been recently come out of incarceration. So we surrounded her with people, and she came out with this play. So it, sometimes it's embryonic from from step one. Sometimes it's a complete play. Sometimes it's a play that's been done and someone wants to revisit them. So I think it's all levels. I think the most important thing is, do I have an affinity for the voice and also what the play is trying to say? Yeah. And I feel that then we can have that conversation.
And do you know when you read a script, do you have a sense immediately of like, I need to position this script in a workshop setting, or this script is ready to go and we can work out the questions that I have about it in a regular rehearsal process?
Sure. I mean, I keep those questions to myself, but sure. I think the most important question is to the playwright, what do you intend to achieve at the reading, at the workshop, or for the production? If it's a production, my job is to make sure that the playwright gets the version of the play in their heads as you were writing it on the stage, and a little bit more.
Yeah.
You know, creating more tension and more context for the play, vocabulary or an aesthetic for the play. But the most important thing for new plays is that I cannot overstep myself.
Right.
My job is to interpret. My job is to be invisible. My job is, if you see me, the director, in that production of a new play, I have failed.
Right.
So my job is basically to answer any questions the playwright may have, and to hopefully be a great collaborator, to push back, to take a step back, to push forward. It's a wonderful relationship.
Yeah.
It's like any, it's a great dating game.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You just want to make sure everyone has a great time. So what do we want out of this? And ultimately, it's not the playwright and it's not me. It's the play.
Yes.
And that's a true, I would say, collaboration. What does a play want?
In the American theater, sometimes I think we understand that the playwright is the queen or the king, and which, you know, I take to mean the playwright has the final cut.
Sure.
In terms of what they're seeing on stage representing their play. Have you ever been in a situation where, you know, you've had a real difference of opinion with the playwright about how a moment should look, and how do you resolve that?
Yeah, I mean, definitely there are moments, but I tend to defer to the playwright too, because I think sometimes there's a reason why a playwright has written a certain scene or a certain moment a certain way. And sometimes we can be very quick to say, well, it doesn't work. And I would advise patience and also repetition. So basically, let's do the scene again. Let's do it in the context of the act or the play, and actually give it a chance to breathe. You know, give it some distance, be objective as well. And sometimes there's a reason why it exists. And sometimes by seeing it a few times, you begin to understand. Mm-hmm. Or you can always ask the playwright why the play is, why that moment is in there. And sometimes the playwright would say, you know, you are right. Mm-hmm. I have those moments too. And sometimes I would say, you know, maybe the playwright hasn't quite understood what they really had wanted to see of it. They may need to see it in the production first. And sometimes you have to give it to the playwright. And I think it's right to do so. So, for example, I myself have gone through that process, and
sure.
I understand.
Sure.
I'm not going to take out that fucking monologue. Oop, can I say that?
Of course, of course.
Because I spent a lot of time writing it, and that's the point of the play.
Yeah, yeah.
And then one, the director would say, oh, Che, it's so didactic and it's so boring. I said, I get it, but I want to see it. And finally, you know, after a second production, when I had to direct the play myself, I stumbled.
That's funny.
Why is that scene,
yes,
that speech so didactic?
Yeah, yeah.
It takes sometimes time.
Yes.
You know, when the play comes out, your job, I think, is to give the playwright the play they see.
Yeah.
And also understand that that production that you're doing is not the final production. It will have a life, hopefully in 100 or 1,000 years. So it will evolve, and the playwright may not even want to change it. And I think that's their prerogative.
Yeah.
But our job, I think, is to make sure that we understand as much as we can, give the scene that moment. And sometimes you will be surprised too, because sometimes you think something and the playwright, thank God, holds onto their guns and say, I have to see it the way it's done this way and written that way. And upon maybe the fifth viewing, I myself am saying, oh, I get it.
Right.
I shouldn't have said what I had to say.
That's great. What's your rehearsal room like? What does it feel like? How do you go about working on a play? Is each play very different? Do you have a kind of flow from first reading to final dress?
Not too different, I guess. I mean, the point is, I like table work. Uh-huh. I want to make sure that we have a chance to all sit down to create a company as soon as possible. And table work is an opportunity for us to also talk about who we are as people, as actors, and also to talk about the characters and the issues of the play. And then once you have, I think, a nice playing ground, that's when a lot of ideas and questions come out. And I always say it's a great time to ask a lot of questions. And then hopefully throughout the process, you will have only one or two when previews come around. And you're going to hold on to those questions all the way through the run. And I always want to say to the actors, keep yourself open. You know, I'm sure your role will not be cut, but things change.
Yeah.
Characters change. Rewrites occur. And if it means three scenes during first or second preview, let's embrace this. Let's figure out what that really is. So having a room that is supportive of the play is the most crucial. Having a cast that is, I wouldn't say malleable, but I would say more open to changes is great, as well as a playwright, and me, myself as well, and the designers too. So it's about a journey with everyone trying to find the core and the heart of the play throughout the process.
I find your idea about really getting to know the actors as people to be really exciting, and I've never heard someone say it in quite that way. Are you talking about, you know, the importance of the kind of lived experience of the actors and how that intersects with the material that they're grappling with?
Yes, and sometimes actors may not have those experiences, you know. So the question is then, how do we provide doorways?
Yes.
And I'm sure all the best actors have an access. The question is, what is that access? And sometimes when actors bring out, I think if you open a room to a place where I'm aware of the word safe room, because I think rehearsals are never usually safe. We can provide an environment, I think, for everyone to be as safe as possible, which I think is the better way to say it. But I think what is really, really interesting is I want you to understand that whatever you say to us will remain in the room. And sometimes actors, you know, would say wonderful things, stories about things that have happened to them that pertains to the play. And sometimes that experience is very crucial for the play and for the character. So looking at the actor as a person is crucial. And sometimes the material in the play, you know, can be very challenging. So how do you find a way for the actor to be, again, safe enough to actually undergo that moment in the play or the experience of the play so that they can keep doing it during the show and after the run is over? So I think it's crucial, because I think once you treat them as, you know, I would hate to think they are meat puppets. Some directors can do that, especially maybe in Europe or Asia. But I think for the actors to contribute, the question is, what do you see in them during auditions that you can bring them in to understand that they are a collaborator? And I think I only can go so far. And if an actor comes in and says, I have an insight, and sometimes that insight is wonderful.
Yeah.
How can you use that for that moment?
Yeah. And how wonderful to be in a position as a director where, you know, at rehearsal you have the potential to be surprised and delighted.
And, you know, yes. And, you know, actors sometimes are just not all these wonderful people that you see. They come from very different places and have very, you know, dramatic experiences, have very hard experiences. And for them to use those experiences, you have to make sure that they are okay as well.
Yeah.
But then there is that authentic truth that you can use. And sometimes that truth is not even for their own characters. That could be used for other characters. So the other actor could understand, have another doorway into that particular play. For example, in Cambodian Rock Band, a play that I recently did with Lauren Yee, there was only one Cambodian in that play. And while I understood a lot of the ravages of that particular history of the Pol Pot genocide in Cambodia, it took, you know, the actor and his mother coming into the room to share something that made us feel, now I understand a little bit more about this play. And that comes from a place of, quote-unquote, authenticity instead of something fictional.
Yeah.
So you always want to open the room to that. Sometimes even your interns or your stage manager may say something that could unlock something. So the question is, how do we keep that conversation open all the time?
That's wonderful. What about designers? How do you use designers to develop and interrogate a new text?
Mm-hmm.
In the American theater, often, you know, especially our scenic designs are due so far in advance of the first rehearsal occurring. How do you deploy designers?
I'm not the best director for this question. I have to say, I think we all have different processes. I mean, I always admire directors. Hey, let's all come together in the room and talk. I'm a little bit more old school in a weird way, and I think I already have ideas of how the play should be like. And the only person I talk to first is my set designer.
Yeah.
I will throw out my ideas, and then hopefully the set designer would understand the points that I'm trying to make and throw back some alternative, more interesting thoughts about design. And then once I can see that design dramaturgically, how it functions for the play, then I will bring the rest in.
Yeah.
So it's usually a whole different process than everyone having a say about something. So
right.
Most of the shows that you see that I do,
yes,
usually have an origin from a point that has come from my own thoughts.
And what kind of thoughts do you, like, I don't know if you can talk about a specific show that you've done recently where, you know, you can help us understand, like, what specifically would you be talking to your scenic designer mm-hmm. about in that first conference? Is it like, I need a box that has a lot of doors? Is it, I need these colors? What do you ask for?
Well, for example, I mean, a recent play would be Letty by Bill Killebrew, which I mentioned earlier.
Yeah.
She had written this play that is very fluid and has got multiple scenes. And I realized, oh, the big key to this play, listening to it really carefully, is that I need an open space. So I've already figured out it has to be a square.
Yeah.
It has to be white.
Yes.
And pieces need to come in and come out really quickly. That's how I sense the play. So I've already somewhat designed the play. And then the other question is, I felt very strongly because in the play, the city of Chicago is a character. How do I portray that? That was when I reached out to Stefan Mazurek, cinematographer, projections designer, and I said very specifically too, I see black and white images of Chicago, and it has to move at some point. But I also know that that will evoke the things that I really want to do. And coming back to the set design, and I said to the set designer, Andrew Boyce, it has to be very simple and amorphous. But the last scene, to me, is the most realistic scene in the play. Mm-hmm. So I spent all my chips on that one last scene.
Yeah.
So it's basically a white space. And at the very end of it, because it's when everyone feels, in the play, kind of trapped. I want to trap them in the scene.
Yeah.
So that space does not allow me to do that. So the last scene, what has happened is that we've created a box set, divided into two, split into two. At the very last scene, the two pieces come together very slowly to create the most realistic scene, and yet it's a little prison of normalcy in which the characters then ultimately get on stage in that particular box set to perform. So again, that was... I think that's the fun part, selfishly, as a director, is to create those images. And you need to probably get the right set designers who's actually willing to say, okay, great idea, let me push back and give you more thought on that. And the same thing with lighting and sound. I mean, I'm not the best person, I have to be honest. I'm weirdly thinks about light, and I know light in a way that I would say, I see that, is that a 60? Can we go up at 75 and can we bring the other light in? And it's a weird kind of process.
Sure.
And I think it's been helpful. Even sound, you know, I would say, what level is that? Can I try this? Can I do that? That's the wrong bird.
Yeah.
And it's weird, but I can hear. I think it's who you are as a person that makes you a director and how you function with designers. And some directors are more collaborative from top down. I'm more collaborative in the middle on the way through. So I have an idea and
so
I just,
interesting.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it's weird. I don't know where I got that from. And it probably it's my early graduate work as a film student. Mm. The mise-en-scène is important to me. So I see things cinematically as well as dramatic. And then I think also studying a lot of the great masters, you know, the use of light, like Robert Wilson. Mm.
Yep.
So all these things come into play. And I think that's every director's DNA.
Yes.
And some designers may hate it. And I have designers come to me and says, don't tell me.
Don't be prescriptive.
Yeah, give me, well, all right, then we'll keep bringing it down. 65, right? Yeah, it's 65. So there we go. I thought we're just saving time. Sorry, lighting designers, we love you.
That's his time. I mean, the scene that you just described in the Bukilabru play and thinking about a lot of your other work, the Luis Alfaro at the Public with that mural on the wall and the huge wall that comes down in the Jihei Park play Hannah and the Dread Gazebo that was at Oregon Shakespeare Festival are all kind of like stunning uses of design. And so, I don't know, it just seems to me like a trademark of your work that it has that visual seduction to it.
It is. I feel like if you come to the theater, the play does one thing. The question is, how do you then give it an environment and a world? And you do not want to be too metaphorical with it, because I think the play has metaphors. You have to trust the play to deliver its metaphors. If you, for one moment, create a production that speaks to the metaphor of the play, I think that you have failed. You know, the question is, how do you provide this? I would say, as a play, as we all know, as directors, we know the play has a journey. My question is, does your design, too, have a dramaturgical journey?
Yeah.
And I think the more it unfolds, especially set design, the more thrilling it becomes. You know, so every time I feel that I do a play, my question is, what can the set keep doing? You know, I don't need a lot of tricks, but I need it to transform as the play transforms. And sometimes you don't need to. Sometimes it could be just be a bare thing, or just the next play I'm doing with Dale Landersmith. You know, it's a play that is in a house.
Yeah.
There's no way I can get in and out of it. So, but using projections, it shifts too. Memory as ghosts, projections as ghosts. So you're always trying to find some place. I think I need something to fight.
Uh-huh.
Which is kind of interesting. I like fighting something, and it's not because I hate something, because I need to wrestle. So if I can keep wrestling with the play and with the design, I feel good about it. If I do not find any tension, which I feel with the design or with the play, I would be very worried.
Mm. You were just mentioning Dale Orlandersmith's play that you're going to be directing. You have a long-term relationship with Dale and her work, and also with Luis Alfaro and probably many other writers. Can you talk about developing those relationships and what gets richer as you continue to work with those writers?
Yeah, I think one of my relationships definitely with Dale, with Luis, with Marcus Gardley is you have to know these people as people. You know, I think if you don't like each other, I think it's not going to work out. And I also don't think that being friends with them also means that I get to work on every play of theirs. I think understanding each other politically, emotionally, as people, as friends, allows us to work on new things. Because as friends would, you know, we will have new thoughts that come into our minds, new ideas. And because of that, our shared history of working together, then there is a path towards a longer and more fruitful collaboration. It also allows us to push each other's buttons even more. I think you want that so-called space where, all right, I'm going to try this. Why don't we try that? Why don't we do this? How about this next project? The idea of people, artists dreaming together is a wonderful thing.
Yeah.
And sometimes you also split ways because you evolve.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's personal. And sometimes you can say, you know, I'm going to work with another director now. I'm going to work with another player right now. And also sometimes when we come back from those little journeys, that next production could be actually more fruitful. So I think it's about maintaining relationships and friendships with artists. And sometimes if it turns out that it could be a production that you can work on together, great. If not, we're still collaborating in a weird way. And I would bring them into a show and say, what do you think of this thing that I just did? So during previews are very helpful. And same thing, vice versa.
Yeah. Is there something that, you know, you've noticed that you can do now with Luis or Dale or Marcus that would have been, you know, inconceivable in the beginning of your relationship?
Yeah, you know, I'll say one more thing too.
Please.
I just realized those names that you just mentioned, hearing them too, is there's also a shared politic. You know, I think
yes.
all these three playwrights share the same beliefs that I do about trying to figure out what is social justice, what is the world in which that we live in can get more representation on the stage. Is it a community thing? Is it an issue thing? What can we say? And I think all these playwrights and I share the same politic. As a result of that, coming to your question is, how do we manifest those thoughts into plays? So I would say things like to Marcus, in Chicago, this is new to me, but I think it's important that we talk about gun violence and schools. Marcus shares the same belief in community, comes to Chicago and writes a play, Gospel of Loving Kindness. Same thing with Luis, you know, he had this play called Bruja at the Magic. And when I read it and I said, I always thought Madea was an immigration play. It's interesting that you went to witchcraft.
Right.
Why don't we start from scratch, this play that you have with Mojada, which he
yes.
ultimately called that play. And let's focus on immigration because it's a piece that you and I are passionate about. So it comes from those places to
yes.
say, let's do that. The politic feels right. Why don't we explore this? Usually to a younger playwright, it's a little harder.
Sure.
You know, hey, what do you think about this? Because I feel like you're ready to write that. They don't know who you are. And I think having gone a couple of rounds, seeing each other at our glory and our ugliest, we can do anything that we want to. Because again,
yes.
we're just two individuals trying to figure out how to create a world.
Yeah. I always, you were like, we've seen each other at our ugliest, and it makes me realize, I always love asking about a catastrophe, you know, just because they're usually pretty good stories,
mm-hmm.
but also, you know, maybe it's the catastrophes that we learn something from or we grow from. Is there anything that comes to mind that was just like, wow?
No, there's none. I have no catastrophes.
Never.
You always cover with makeup. I'm sure there were catastrophes. I think the most...
Or just a moment, you know, that went wrong and went sideways.
Yeah, there were moments where sometimes, you know, you say the wrong thing, you know, and then drama occurs, the playwright gets upset, and I realize I've overstepped. Or maybe something else is occurring, which I do not know. And then I would just say, can we talk? And talking helps.
Yeah.
Okay, what are you upset about? The wonderful thing so far, it hasn't happened to me yet, that the playwright has not come to me and said, oh, we're going the wrong way, and in a very bad way. Sometimes we'll say, because I've opened those channels, it's always good to know early. Things like, I don't think this scene should be played this way. Thank you, tell me what.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll figure it out. Catastrophes would be, oh, you didn't say a thing, I didn't open that door, it's previews, and you hate everything.
Right.
And sometimes there are moments, you know, things like, the set is not working out. Okay, great. Even though we have looped you in, now that you've seen it, what doesn't work? And how can we resolve this? So usually, catastrophes always mean to me, big or small, that the playwright is unhappy about something, and what can we do to resolve this? And how can I find that common ground?
Yep.
So it hasn't been horrible. I think. I'm trying to think of a catastrophe. So far, I feel like I've resolved them. Oh, I blocked them out.
Good. That's a good strategy. You know, one thing I just wonder about, I remember hearing David Cromer a long time ago say something like, in the beginning of his career, he realized that when you are a director of new plays, you have to kiss a lot of frogs in order to find your prince. And so
you mean playwrights?
Playwrights, in other words. Not that David was making out with playwrights, but that...
not we know of.
That we know of.
Love you, David.
but that the road of a director who's directing untested work is a harder one to hoe than if he, you know, directed the American classics and made a name for himself that way. And he talks about that a little bit as like finding a book of American classics and saying, I really need to do these plays in order to accelerate my career.
Well, I think David and most directors have that luxury. As a director, I'm rarely given a classic play to direct because I'm Asian American. And I think the wheels have slowly turning. It's a very different thing. The only classic play that I've been asked to direct directly without adapting.
Yes.
has been Our Town at Oregon Shakespeare Festival. That's the only one play that any American theater has given me to direct. And that's also because probably, you know, I was one of the early batches of Asian American directors or directors of color. Now there are more doors that are open. So that luxury of doing those plays to hone one's craft, not a reality in my world. In fact, the only reality was Asian American theater saying to me, there's some place that we would love for you to direct. So who I am today too comes from a place, aside from Bill Rausch, who has been visionary enough to give me an opportunity, and other theaters. It has been some of these theaters that say, you know, we need the community to come in together. That was how I honed my craft.
Yes.
And I think also, I'm not sure about Kissing Frogs. I'm sure that's David's point of view. But mine was to read the play. And if I have an emotional relationship to that play, and I feel very strongly about the play, that's already a plus. The second plus is whether the playwright and I can have a conversation and we can work together. And sometimes we're just meant to be friends. You know, working together is not going to work out. And if the playwright is excited about working together, then let's do this together. So I feel like I haven't had to kiss many frogs. And sometimes it's about the play more than the playwright.
Sure.
And if the playwright is excited to go on this journey, we're going on this journey together, because in the end, we both realize that the play, again, is the thing, not the playwright. So all that to say, you know, there may be a different path today. It may be playwrights doing classic work, but I also feel like sometimes you don't need to. You can do both, or you can do just the one. It's where your passions lie. And sometimes it's actually doing the third production of Laramie Project, for example,
sure,
that could get you seen. But then I think the most important thing is working on the Miller play and working with a play with someone like, you know, Marcus Gardley are two different things. Marcus Gardley is going to be next to you, looking at you, and talking to you. You can do Miller and interpret how much you want to, and it may be an interesting production. It doesn't mean that you know how to talk to Marcus Gardley.
Do you have any advice for kind of emerging directors who are coming up, who have a passion and an interest and a prerogative to direct new plays, since you have your experience and your career to speak for you?
Definitely. I think the most important thing is read all the plays and find out which plays you love. And if you love those plays, read those playwrights' entire body of work. And then be brave. Reach out to these playwrights. You know, not through their agents, because it's going to get complicated. If you should try, try it. Find a way to email them, have them out for coffee. And most playwrights love to meet directors. Mm-hmm. And especially directors who get them. And I would also say, generationally, meet your own generation's playwrights. I think as the older generations have their own play directors in their fold, sometimes they too are willing to play around and explore with younger directors. But if you're coming out, meet your generation.
Yeah.
Because they understand you and you understand them more immediately than anyone else. Cultivate that. And when you do, champion those plays, and they'll champion you. And at some point, things will work out. If not, keep reading, and maybe David is right. Then we can do some other plays too. And I think the most important thing is what you want to do as a director. If it's about a job, then I think it's a mistake. You should direct this play because there's no reason why you can't do this play, and you have to do this play because you will only die if you can't. Then I think that play and that production will become the thing that you really want. So don't be afraid to reach out to those playwrights.
This program is called Regional Originals because the SDC Foundation is interested in really looking at all of America's different regions. I wonder how you would characterize Chicago, which is where your theater is based, but also, you know, if you could compare the Chicago region to other regions that you've worked in. I feel like you've worked in so many and have a really clear sense of how each region supports or contributes to the American theater ecosystem.
Well, one thing you learn at some point is that every city, every region is very different. There are different ways of telling stories, how they receive stories. And for me, being in Chicago for 1 year, the first year was to understand how they receive stories. And I realized, again, this is my perception, that Chicagoans actually have little tolerance for stories that feel a little whimsical or that's not heartfelt or truthful. This idea of truth is actually very interesting to me. And as a director, I've learned that I can actually access that in a different sort of way. So if a play is on stage in Chicago, it has to speak to the people. There's a certain kind of romanticized working class mentality that's mm-hmm. in the air, even though they could be living in very high-priced condos. There's still an idea of the people. So the question is, how do we start bringing plays to the people that they can respond to? I call this, in a weird way, you know, dramaturging the audience, which is very interesting because I realized I had to read up about the history of Chicago.
Fascinating.
I need to observe the audiences, and I realized there's certain things that they like and certain things they struggle with, and yet it has its own DNA. Yeah. You know, I mean, it's a town that really loves its naturalism and its realism. And I think the new generation of Chicago theater makers, whom I actually in love with, are not pushing those barriers, which is kind of great. So it's more, I would say, adventurous in terms of aesthetic. It used to be when I do the play, you know, I remember bringing Universus Merrillville into my theater, and that was the defining lightning rod where half of my audiences left. Mm-hmm. It says, oh, it's nonlinear. I don't get it. You know, why are people of color saying all these things? And there were racist comments too, and people left the theater. It was interesting, but that's another way of understanding the audience. And then at some point, not only giving them what they want, but slowly pushing the envelope so that they can actually explore different forms and learn different ways of looking at theater. But there is a DNA. Yeah. And, you know, the coasts, again, my theory.
Yeah, yeah, please.
Because I think there's more foreigners that have come onto those shores. So the idea of new thoughts, new ideas is very fascinating. And Chicago's tribal, because that's the way it's been written.
Yeah.
That's why I think, to some extent, segregation is huge. And that's why I think I like the city, because there's something I can battle. Again, the idea of I need to battle something. And how do we... And I think all Chicago theaters are trying to figure this out beautifully, is how do we start opening those doors? How do we stop being tribal? How do we become one? Because I think right now in this country, we're done with being tribal. And I think the problem with that is us being tribal.
Yeah.
How does theater then bring in the face of Chicago into your own theater? So that's what we're trying to figure out.
How do you do that when you are a director who's you know, been hired to do a four-week process in a region? How do you dramaturg the audience in that situation? Or do you just assume that the artistic director has made a great choice in hiring you to direct this particular play, and that it will kind of take care of itself because the artistic director is...
I think it's a split, which you're right about saying that, Graham. I think one thing is, I assume that the artistic director has a reason for choosing this play, because he or she will have an idea of why this play is important to the community. But then the other question is, when you come in, okay, now you're doing this play, how does it speak to that audience? Is there anything that you need to know? Or is this something that you need to explore? And I think it's really hard, because you just can't come into a city or a region and get to know them immediately. You have to understand that, for example, OSF is willing to take a risk on Jihei Park's play, Hannah and the Dread Gazebo, because they understand that the Asian American audiences and the non-Asian American audiences are ready for that play. I trusted that.
Yeah.
And it was a play that was very complicated, and I had my doubts, but I knew that, to some extent, Bill and his team understood that it was a play that the audiences were ready for. And true enough, the play was ready for that audience.
Yes.
You have to trust that.
Yeah.
And I think half the battle is won. And the other half is that play that you are presenting in this stage with this audience, are they receiving that? And that's more immediate. That's when you have an audience that's in the room.
Yeah.
So it's a whole separate thing.
Before we say goodbye, do you have any shows coming up that our listeners could check out that's going to be happening in the end of 2018? You spoke a little bit about Cambodian Rock Band, which will be playing all season next season at Oregon Shakespeare Festival in 2019. Anything else they can look out for?
Yeah, Dale Orlando Smith's new play, The Lady from Denmark at the Goodman, in the fall of 2018. 2019, I'm remounting Brian Quijada's Where Did We Sit on the Bus at City Theatre in Pittsburgh. And then at the end of the season, 2019, at the Public Theater, we're putting up Mojada by Luis Alfaro.
Fabulous. Thank you so much, Chen. It's been such a pleasure to sit down and talk to you.
Well, thank you for having me.
This podcast was brought to you by SDC Foundation. SDC Foundation events and programs are designed to offer access, opportunity, and community to directors and choreographers at all levels of their career. To find out more, you can go to our website at www.sdcfoundation.org.